This is Jane McGonigal, the author of Super Better and a big fan of the Psych Tech Podcast. You're listening to Psych Tech Podcast, where you will get the future of psychology and technology.
Hi, listeners. Welcome to Psych Tech. My name is Jose Cardona. Kelly is out this week, so I contacted a few people who I thought might make for a good conversation, and I reached out to my friend Doug Ronning. Let me read you his bio real quick. He's a licensed marriage and family therapist and registered drama therapist, board-certified trainer with the North American Drama Therapy Association. He's an assistant professor at California Institute of Integral Studies, clinical supervisor for the adolescent program at Westside Community Mental Health, and a private practice therapist. And he's the founder and facilitator of the Monster Movie Salon. Now, he's done a lot of cool things, including monsters and horror films to facilitate psychotherapy and groups like the Monster Movie Salon. He used to be a writer on the TV show Tales from the Crypt. A few years ago, he and I had a conversation about that. So I'm actually going to put that episode in the show notes. It wasn't a Psych Tech episode. It was an episode of Geek Therapy. But I thought it was fantastic. And it was so good to connect with him again. And I reached out to him to see if he had any ideas about, you know, a possible episode. And he had a really good one. He, like many other people, had just watched Stranger Things on Netflix. And he told me that he was thinking about this idea of the mad scientist. So in that show, there is a scientist that's kind of behind this project that leads to all these things that are happening. I thought it was a great idea. So coming up is a conversation between me and Doug Ronning. Now, we drop a lot of movie names, some older, some newer, but they're all in the either sci-fi or horror genre. Two movies that I saw in preparation and after talking with him about the idea were The Stanford Prison Experiment, which is all about Phil Zimbardo, which if you've listened to this show before, you know we have some feelings about, and a movie called Experimenter, about Dr. Milgram's experiments. And those are both two prominent psychologists who ran some experiments that had people talking. And we're going to talk about that and kind of these tropes in movies and sci-fi and horror. I had a lot of fun talking with Doug. This episode is a little different, but definitely in the spirit of what Kelly and I usually do. So here's our conversation. So actually, I'll start by telling you a funny story. I think it's funny. When I saw the trailer for Stranger Things, I found it so scary that I thought it was like, you know, legit horror, and I was like, no, I'm not gonna watch that. And a friend of mine then texted me when he was watching. He's like, are you watching Stranger Things? I was like, no, it looks too scary for me. And he said, no, he pretty much just called me an idiot and told me to watch it immediately. And that's why I watched Stranger Things, and it was amazing. So I'm so glad that when we were, you know, throwing around ideas, you brought up the idea of Stranger Things because I loved it. It was so good. Did you enjoy it?
Very much.
Did you like it? Are you a fan? Yeah.
I'm a huge fan. Yeah.
And kind of the idea you brought up was this idea of the mad scientist, and I think in an email you said, the idea of the mad scientist is very prevalent in Stranger Things. And I had to think about it for a second. And I think it's really encapsulated in an article that you sent me too that said, you know, the monster in Stranger Things is really kind of a distraction from who the real villains are. Mm-hmm. And now that I go back, there's absolutely, like, it's Dr. Brenner. He's the bad guy, obviously. Mm-hmm. In the show, so kind of like, why did you want to talk about that? Like, what about it spoke to you and kind of caught your eye?
Well, so many of my favorite movies from the late 70s and early 80s have that as a theme, and so many of clearly their inspirations, like The Fury, Firestarter, and then I started to think about how mad scientists have been depicted in I was actually journaling about it. About how mad scientists are depicted in movies. And then I remembered I had that book, Monsters and Mad Scientists. So I went and reread the chapter, and I thought, oh, man, there's so much here.
Yeah, that's cool. I haven't read the book, but you sent me some excerpts and some graphs and stuff. What is that book about exactly?
It's a cultural history of the horror movie, and he basically took 264 horror movies that were released between 1900 and 1985, and he actually put data points out, and then he studied, for example, the percentage of threats in horror movies caused by science or scientists, which reached its peak around 1940, when between 95 and 100% of the horror movies had some kind of threat of science and or scientists in them. And then it actually decreased over time until the 1980s. So it tracks the different kinds of mad science that were depicted in horror movies. So like in the early years, it was usually an individual who was exploring some kind of forbidden science, like Frankenstein, the Invisible Man, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Then in the 1940s and 1950s, during the nuclear age, the mad science in movies became an accident or an offshoot of the, so not a purposeful, but an unseen consequence of the science, like the giant ants in Them.
Yeah.
Or Godzilla. And then it became more paranoid science starting in the 1960s, where the government or corporations got involved, and there was no longer an individual mad scientist, but the kind of a system that could not be trusted. So, and so this was like the Fury Scanners, Firestarter, RoboCop, Aliens, Alien.
And I haven't read the chapter, but to me it seems like the movies have always followed kind of what's happening in the news, right? So, I mean, World War II, you're hearing like all these things about real life atrocities happening, and then there's all these reports of different things that the government is doing, so then the movies start following that, and like I guess that's why they probably peaked in the 40s and then kind of changed and dropped over time, I'm guessing,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much of was really known in the general public. So like MKUltra, which is actually referred to in Stranger Things.
And it's a real thing. It was an actual thing.
It's a real thing.
Yeah.
And yes, and they a lot of that has now been released. Like the old files have now been declassified, so they're actually out there on the internet. I don't know how much of like people who were creating these stories knew about it, like, and so they started to fold it into their stories. Certainly, there must have been rumors or some kinds of news media about it coming out,
yeah.
Because it suddenly became so prevalent in the 1960s and 1970s. And there were things, there were studies like, you know, they were looking at LSD and how LSD could be used in psychotherapy and how if it could be used for mind control. So there were those kinds of studies taking place, not only within the government through MKUltra, but in universities and exploring
A lot of people were exploring LSD for a while there. Yeah, but it was really interesting to look at, you know, kind of that trend and see how it changed over time, because I was thinking about how now and you know, and according to the book, it's not like, how up to date is that graph in the book?
1985.
Right. So and I think even now it's still, I think it's a reflection, you know, like we don't have that many crazy science stories in the news. Like we had cloning, right?
Yeah.
For a while with Dolly, and then a few movies came out about cloning, but then we haven't had that much, right?
Right. And even when it does show up in movies, it tends to be more like a subplot as opposed to at the forefront of the story. With the exception of, like, in the last few years, there's been Human Centipede. And then last year there was The Great Ex Machina, But
do you consider something like Saw, like kind of around there, where there's
it
like
could, I mean, there's definitely a psychological kind of a testing going on there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess that could be grouped into the whole mad scientist idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not really doing it for scientific reasons.
You
know, there's a different ulterior motive. It's like one of the movies that will often be referred to as mad science is Rocky Horror Picture Show. But Rocky Horror Picture Show, again, he's not doing it for scientific reasons in any way. It's the pursuit of pleasure. I think it's when there's actually an exploration of what is the scientific benefit, like in The Fly, when he's actually trying to come up with a transportation system to move matter from one place to another, and then that unforeseen consequence of a fly gets in there with him when he's trying it on himself. One of the things that I've never seen a breakdown by anyone, but something that I started to do was a list of mad scientists who use themselves as the subjects, like Dr. Jekyll.
Dr. Jekyll.
Or the Invisible Man, versus one that uses others as the subject, as in Frankenstein, as in Reanimator, Human Centipede, Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah. Yeah. And in those cases, I mean, you could categorize them also in like willing subjects and unwilling subjects too.
Right? Yes.
Where something like Dr. Moreau, the kids have no idea, right? That they're a part of this experiment. And something like, well, Frankenstein, it's like dead pieces, right? So the creatures are aware in a way. Yeah.
Right. And in Dr. Moreau, it's been a while since I saw the movie, but I think they started as animals and they become human. So like he's using human DNA or injecting human DNA into them.
I don't know why I was thinking of Boys from Brazil when I said the Island of Dr. Moreau. I have no idea why I did that.
Well, and that Boys from Brazil, again, was inspired by a real scientist. Who was, of course, a Nazi. And that's an example of the whole cloning, and they were trying to recreate a Hitler.
Yeah, and I believe nobody was aware, right? The kids weren't aware, the parents weren't aware of what was happening. That one's scary. Just the idea that could that someone would even have that idea is kind of, I don't know. I think there's a lot of paranoia as far as like for the viewer and the public and maybe the society at the time when some of these movies came out, like they're feeding off of this potential, obviously, right? That most of these scenarios are scary, right? They're frightening, whether they're classified as a horror film or not. Something like, in most cases, right, it would be like classified as a horror, but even when it's just science fiction, there's still this element of well, like that argument that Alien is a sci-fi movie, but it's also a horror movie. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of that in these films, and I know that I've seen quite a few movies. Like Boys from Brazil always like left me uneasy. Even something like, and I'm gonna jump around in time up, but like something like The Truman Show, I was thinking about the other day. Mm-hmm. Like I was small when I saw that movie, and that movie scared me. Like it was the idea that could be possible, that you could not know that you were being observed all the time, was so frightening to me. That may be the scariest movie I've ever seen.
Well, that's like mad media because they were, again, it was being just done for entertainment purposes.
Yeah.
And the creation of a TV show.
Yeah. Yeah. But I keep thinking about, again, you know, when you're watching Stranger Things and you see those flashbacks to, you know, what happened to Eleven and her mom, you know, she's, like she's a kid, you know, she's alone, and there's this doctor just like picking and prodding. And once, you know, it escalates the isolation tank, you know, and she's afraid, and, you know, you see that she's not like excited about going forward. She never really seems like she's into it, you know, like she can't wait for the next experiment to come up. And that's very uncomfortable to watch. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting in that in Stranger Things, because while there are people involved in the organization that do really bad things, they actually kill people. But the doctor, the kind of the worst things that we see him do are mistreat her. So like he's misusing this role of father in a way to get her to do things and punishing her. That makes him really, really despicable, almost even more despicable in a way than like the woman who clearly works for him, who comes in and shoots someone early on in the miniseries. We see her kill somebody, but I still think in our minds that the doctor is a more evil character. He's also, it seems, in charge of the entire operation.
But it's like what you said. Like you see her, and she's clearly just there to assassinate a guy, you know, mm-hmm. and she's doing that job. But Dr. Brenner's, you know, he's a father figure, and he's really nice. And she calls him. Does Eleven call him father or dad or Papa?
Papa.
And you know that makes it. So much worse, just so, mm-hmm. so bad. And then to know what she goes through, you know, to know that, I don't think he's aware that he's sending her, like what she's seeing on the other side until it's too late. But still, to think that she's kind of going through that, ugh.
Well, this is something else that, that in terms of the history of the mad scientist, so often now the mad scientist, whether it's a person or a corporation, is about the militarization of a person or something, like in RoboCop. And that's what they're basically designing her, Eleven, to be a weapon.
Yeah.
You know, they try to get her to kill a cat through her mind. And he actually rewards her when Eleven, big spoilers here, but when Eleven actually does kill some of the guards. He treats her with kindness and
he's filled with pride.
And then there's a secondary where somehow because they've opened this dimensional gateway, they're also having Eleven communicate with this monster in some way. So they're putting this child in great danger because they know that this creature is capable of killing people because it's killed, but they're trying to use her psychic abilities to be able to communicate it with it in some way.
And you know, I love you know, talking about sci-fi on this show. Like this show was born from science fiction, right? From mm-hmm. Black Mirror, just so good and also very scary at times. for things. You know, along these lines too. And so before we get into kind of some of the very specific real life psychology examples, are there any films that really focused on, you know, where the mad scientist was a psychologist or a psychiatrist and not, you know, a physicist or a chemist or a military doctor or something like that?
I can't remember if in Altered States, if he was a psychologist or psychiatrist. I know he was because he was studying how these sense deprivation immersion tanks would affect his, and then he started to, if you remember, it's almost like a Dr. Jekyll story. It activates the more primitive his more primitive brain, and he becomes more animalistic, and like he runs out in the middle of the night and kills an animal so he becomes like a caveman again. That's the only one I can think of. There are, of course, like there's Dr. Hannibal Lecter, who's not a mad scientist, but he is this brilliant psychologist who also has this shadow and uses his intelligence for demented and horrid acts.
Even in Boys from Brazil, I guess it's interesting because it is a social experiment. mm-hmm. right? Even though the cloning, it happens, but the real, they're all clones of Hitler, but really the experimental part is that they're trying to recreate his upbringing as right. closely as possible. So it's really a social, a social, behavioral, emotional experiment.
Mm-hmm. Because they're yeah. not sure if it's nature or nurture, so they
exactly.
cause they've cloned his body exactly, but they, so they try to replicate his Hitler's story as much as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
With each of the clones, yeah.
Oh, that's such it's an old movie, but it's so good. I didn't even have that movie in my notes. I don't know why it came to me now. It's such a good. Oh,
well, in Ex Machina is interesting. Ex Machina, because you don't know who the subject is in Ex Machina. I don't know
oh,
if you saw.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what's so interesting about that movie. And that is definitely more. He's coming at, and again, he is this tech billionaire in the scientist in that movie, and an inventor, and yet the experiment at the center of the story is a psychological one.
Oh yeah, and even right, what he's trying to do is he's trying to recreate a brain that thinks like a human, and then even though you think it's the robot, right, or the android that is really the subject, it's not.
Yeah, yeah, that's a brilliant movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Also, one of those movies that makes you feel a little uncomfortable as you're watching it. It's all like tight, close quarters, and there's only three people really in the whole movie, and oh, it's so good. It's so good. But yeah, it's definitely just one giant experiment. And you know, it's funny, I knew that the Stanford Prison Experiment movie had come out, and I was hesitant to watch it because Phil Zimbardo says a lot of things that I do not agree with. Mm-hmm. I will... me and Kelly are not fans. We had a whole episode, I think, last year called like we disagree with Zimbardo, mm-hmm. and it's specifically things on media and video games and technology and
right.
things like that,
right.
which is what he's doing now. But so I didn't watch the movie, but then in preparation for this, when you mentioned, you know, you brought up the Stanford Prison Experiment film and Experimenter, and I had no idea that Experimenter existed. Hmm. I didn't know that Dr. Milgram's story was also made into a movie. So I saw them both. And wow. Those both movies are really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really,
they are.
Really good. Uh-huh. So like if you haven't watched the films, you know, if you're listening to this and you haven't watched those films, they are two films that came out very close to each other in the past year, and they represent two of the most famous psychology experiments ever done, and they're practically like urban legends. Like people talk about them and get all the facts wrong, you know, because like so many people talk about them and repeat facts about the study. And it was so funny to even see an experimenter where someone comes up to him and is like, "Oh, you torture people." He's like, "No, I mm-hmm. don't. Like, did you read the book? I mean, that's not what happened at all." And I remember, you know, I've heard people say the same thing, like, "Oh, that's the guy that, you know, made people electrocute other people." And that's not the case at all. And so I definitely want to touch on those two movies because I think, you know, you brought them up to me. So do you see Dr. Milgram and Dr. Zimbardo in those instances, like acting as kind of that mad scientist archetype?
Well, I think within the movies, they're mad scientist movies. But no, yeah. I don't think either of them. Because, I mean, one of the ideas is what is mad, you know, if you're mm-hmm. talking about a mad scientist. At least as depicted in the pictures, really surprised by the outcomes of their experiments, the way that they unfolded. Even though, like, and again, I think one of the things that when people think of mad scientists, it's the forbidden. It's that forbidden science. It's that well, some things we just don't need to really experiment about because we have this felt sense of, like, digging up bodies and sticking them together and electrocuting them. There's something immoral about that in Frankenstein. And I think that a lot of people think of the Stanford Prison Experiment and the Milgram Obedience Experiment in the same way. Like, we know that the people will follow an authority figure. Are you putting them then through this an experience of possible trauma by having them follow this authoritarian figure and electrocute somebody in the other room, which of course really wasn't happening, but the subjects thought it was.
So actually, let's walk through the experiment real quick for people who don't know. Dr. Milgram set up this scenario where two people would walk into the room, and at random, one would be a teacher, one would be a learner, but it wasn't really at random. There was really only one person who was the subject of the study, and they were always the teacher. The learner was always a member of the team, and the teacher would be provided a what they call a shock box, right? And they had a list of items. Essentially, the learner was answering questions, and every time he got an answer wrong, the teacher would have to electrocute them with a shock that was, every time it would go higher and higher in voltage, up to 450 volts. And kind of to let them know what it felt like, they received a shock themselves at the beginning that was 10 times less than the maximum possible shock. And and throughout the process, right, they again, I'm if I'm saying anything wrong, I'm just saying how it's represented in the movie,
yeah.
Right? And how they kind of go through different iterations, and you do see the learner, or you hear the learner even screaming and asking someone to, you know, asking the person to stop. And really I think the inspiration for Dr. Milgram, right, it was that his family left Europe right before the Nazis started concentration camps and all of the horrible things that happened that the Nazis were doing. And he kind of wanted to study how ordinary good people could do horrible things when told to.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, there's this big theme in the movie that when he presented the idea to a panel, everybody said, you know, nobody is going to go all the way to 450 volts. And kind of the surprising thing is that when he did it over hundreds and hundreds of times, and it's been repeated throughout history, other times also, it seems to be like 65% of the people go all the way to the end,
exactly,
shocking the person repeatedly.
Yeah.
And again, that's one of those studies that just, it's almost legendary, right? Where people get that percentage wrong. People talk about how, you know, society is just full of sadists and horrible people and things like that. But that's not really what it was about.
Right.
But it's a fascinating study that was, again, like you said, it was very surprising to him. He didn't expect those results. And the movie is so good. I highly right now it's on Netflix. I recommend, mm-hmm, I highly recommend it. I enjoyed it so much. And it made me think a lot. But it was so, again, it was so difficult to watch people being observed, being these subjects, and doing things, and in particular these two movies and these two experiments, just going through the motions because they were told to, you know, the theme of authority and what your role is to play and doing something even though you don't want to do it. But just the, you know, relevant to what we're talking about, while that person is sitting there struggling with what they're doing at that moment, inflicting harm or supposedly inflicting harm onto someone else, there's this psychologist on the other side of the glass just watching and taking notes while that's happening. And that type of stuff used to happen way more often.
Mm-hmm.
And you really can't do that now, right? But it happened, and it was in the news, and people talked about that. And actually, let's go over the Stanford Prison Experiment quickly, too. That one's kind of more straightforward, where Dr. Zimbardo got a group of students split them into groups. Half of them were guards, half of them were prisoners, and they simulated a prison experience, and they recorded and watched while it happened, and it got incredibly out of hand very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm. And that was arbitrary, who became a guard and who became a prisoner.
Yeah,
Was arbitrary.
Yep. Yeah, there's this great scene in the movie, again, where they're like, what happened to him? Like, why did he break? What did we miss? And he's like, the only difference between him and the guard was a coin flip. Mm-hmm. You know, there wasn't really a thought process or anything like that. And that movie was just very uncomfortable. But I think the part that made it the most uncomfortable for me was not the horrible things that were happening among the subjects. It was that Zimbardo was just watching and making the decision to not intervene and just see what would happen, you know, playing with people's lives like that, which is, like you said, the movies show are about that, I think. And that's what they show best, you know, and that's kind of that mad scientist idea. Like, I'm just going to prod a little more. I'm just going to stand back and see what happens. If I put all these things together, let's just, you know, sit back while people are essentially suffering.
And I think that one of the interesting things to me is like when a subject becomes an object, and like, so, they're not interviewing these people, so they're not understanding what their subjective experience is. They're just watching them play these things out. And they're treated more like objects as opposed to subjects, at least in the Stanford Prison Experiment. I mean, because there's really dehumanizing things that go on.
Well, I think in the Milgram experiment too, because they're just, there's a script, and everybody just follows the script exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, and it's like you don't, yeah, I know, there's just like this dehumanizing aspect to it. And kind of, I don't know, I'm curious to know what you think, but I wonder if just we're desensitized from kind of this idea of this kind of experimentation because we're actually participants in things like that way more often than any generations prior, just because of the nature of technology. And for example, actually, there's this really good scene in the Stanford Prison Experiment where they're watching what at first I thought was an experiment where no, I'm sorry, it's an experimenter where there's this elevator and three people walk in and they face the opposite. They don't face the door, they face the back. And then a fourth person walks in and sees that everybody's facing the wrong way, and then they eventually face the wrong way too. And it was very similar to the kind of social experiments that Milgram would perform. But then he mentions that that's just candid camera. Mm-hmm. And it's a hidden camera show. And I hate prank shows. I hate hidden camera shows for that same reason. And many times, especially living here in New York City, I'm guessing you've had the same experience in San Francisco, where you're like, is this for real? Is there a camera somewhere? Is this really happening? Oh, am I being watched?
Yeah. When some kind of moral dilemma happens on the street, you mean?
Yeah, or just you see something strange and you're like, is this real? Is this? I don't know. I think media over the years, like Candid Camera was like a really popular show for many, many years, right? And again, and something like Pranked and things like that, where they were so popular. And I know that in me, it instilled this slight paranoia, hyper awareness of things like that, and just the thought of them made me feel really mad. And I think it's the same feeling that I got watching these movies, of just these are real people being put in situations that are not normal, are not natural, they're unaware, and there's somebody watching and kind of manipulating the whole thing.
Yeah, well, there's the television show What Would You Do? Which is a similar thing. They set up some kind of a moral dilemma. Somebody witnesses an act of racism or witnesses an act of homophobia sitting in a restaurant, and how many people will stand up and say something to the... it's social experiments for entertainment purposes. It's a very peculiar kind of...
entertainment, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't, that does not entertain me.
Yeah, no.
And the idea of possibly being there infuriates me. But, you know, when you look at technology, for example, we mentioned Netflix a couple times. Stranger Things is on Netflix. We recently did an episode where we discussed how Netflix does their A/B testing, which is the for the cover images, right? So they're constantly splitting their users into groups. They'll have a control group. They'll have these different variables going, and they'll use different versions of cover art to see what attracts more clicks. Mm. And that type of thing happens to us every single time we use our phones, every time we go online. And to an extent, advertising works the same way. These are experiments that are constantly ongoing and evolving, and none of us really agreed to be a part of an experiment. We agreed to be consumers. We agreed to be subscribers. But this type of thing is going on constantly. And that's what I was getting at before, that I feel like we've kind of been desensitized to that idea that somebody might be watching, because the truth is that a lot of our behavior is tracked and monitored. And even though it may be anonymous, that is actually happening. And that mm-hmm. didn't happen to our parents and to our grandparents, because there was no way to track that information.
Yeah. No, we're data points. Unwillingly, like the algorithms that are built into Netflix, even that decide what to feature, you may like this, are mm-hmm. based on what you've liked versus what other people have liked, and then tracking those kinds of patterns.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all, yeah, we are sets of data points whenever we're involved in these subscription services and even, yeah. Amazon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're one of the biggest. Yeah, there's so much data that they're constantly collecting on our habits. And even to a certain extent, the review process is kind of you opting in, is another layer of you opting in to giving feedback to this. I don't know, it's all constant experimentation. But we don't look at it that way. We don't talk about it as an experiment. And we sometimes refer to it as research, right? But you're absolutely right. That idea that we're just, that these are data points, or look at all the data that we have. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you agree or disagree, but I don't think it's that far of a stretch from, what we're talking about in all these films. It's different, but it's very eerily similar.
Yeah. There's no potential for trauma, like in mm-hmm. like with the Prison Stanford experiment or the Milgram experiment. Both of them had the potential for trauma, but I can't think of the potential for trauma that would come out of these, just having our interactions on Facebook watched, or our movie patterns. There's certainly a lot of data collected about us, and then we don't know what's done with it, mm-hmm. who they share it with, or who they, because we basically give them carte blanche when we agree to take part in these services. Particularly yeah. the free services like Facebook. Just recently there was an article about how Facebook, you don't decide what kind of where you are in the political spectrum. You don't fill out some kind of a form, but Facebook has pigeonholed you in some, whether you are a social liberal, or whether you are a social conservative or a fiscal conservative, or and you can go now and find out what by going into your own preferences, see where Facebook has actually positioned you. Which it's, I find really,
they're profiling us.
Yeah, they're profiling. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and no, but you're absolutely right. There is no. Because of the way that we are participating, there isn't, again, that ability necessarily. I mean, I guess if I thought really hard about it, I could come up with some ways that would probably be a stretch. But to inflict harm on somebody else, or to be traumatized. And that's why the ethics codes for research like that is very, very different now than it was 50 years ago. And it's funny, I saw a very recent interview with Dr. Zimbardo And he talked about how he laments the old ways, how he wishes that, you know, we weren't, I don't want to, you know, say what he said, you know, incorrectly. I'll paraphrase kind of what he said. It seemed like he really believes that there are things that need that society could benefit from more experimentation like that, because there's a lot of things that we are overlooking, essentially, that we're not looking at, right? That because we lack the ability to do experiments that are willing to go further. And even though now I'm putting words in his mouth, right? But when he says go further, it means potentially harming someone or purposefully deceiving them. And because that's what these experiments were like. And you know, these are the most popular ones. If you look into the history of psychology research, there's all sorts of crazy stuff that was done, including like MKUltra, again, real program in the government for decades, and kind of it was about mind control, was really like the focus.
And medical, like the Tuskegee syphilis experiment. You know, where the public health service actually injected syphilis into African-American men for over 40 years.
Yep.
I mean, that's not a conspiracy theory. That actually happened.
Yeah, and it was, that's just to see what happens.
Then that's just to see what happens and to track that kind of,
Again, it's like, I hate nature documentaries that are talking about or you're watching an animal die or being killed by another and somebody's narrating it. And you're like, but someone was there and nobody did anything about it, you know? And that's kind of what happened for years. And there's other examples, like women who were... in different states, there were programs to sterilize women who were minorities, and those were more like social programs. But it was still like, well, let's see if this will work. You know, let's try this out.
And we think of we acknowledge the Nazis did these kinds of things because they had captive people that they were doing experiments, psychological, medical experiments on. And yet this is the United States. You know, this is in the general population that these kinds of things took place.
Yeah. I mean, eugenics was a popular term, you know? So some people were, you know, very much in favor of eugenics. And that wasn't, you know, exclusive to Germany. That came over here too. There were people who thought that that's, you know, we should breed, you know, a certain way. And it's just so many things have happened.
Well, and I think this is why the archetype was so prevalent in the 20th century. Yeah. And we've seen less of it as an archetype in stories in the 21st century. But it was particularly, like I said, according to Andrew Tudor, it peaked in the 1940s. Well, think all of these things were happening in the 1940s. World War II was happening in the 1940s, and that was then coming out in the media and in the stories and in the because that was when nearly 100% the year 1940 that. Nearly 100% of the horror movies had some kind of mad science in it at the center of it.
And
it makes sense actually, when you think of
the what's historical going on in context. The
world. Yeah,
yeah. Now I'm thinking. I can think of more examples of where the mad scientist is kind of even at times a hero, right? Or at least a protagonist, like Doc Brown wasn't a villain. I mean, he messed some things up, right? But it was by accident. And in Fringe, you had I forgot the name of John Noble, the character that he played. But he was like this mad scientist who had done all these horrible experiments many years ago. But now he's kind of, you know, he's kind of the lead actor in the show, the lead mover, right? He's solving cases and he's solving these problems because he didn't cause all of them, but he's smart enough to fix them now, you know? And kind of that, the mad genius is kind of depicted quirky, but also as almost as a hero, you know?
Right. Doc Brown is from Back to the Future is kind of in the same categories I think of as like the Nutty Professor.
Yeah.
Or Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, you know, whereas there's this kind of, he's a buff, kind of a buffoon, but he's also scientifically brilliant. And he does the screw up, but then he is really working on the problem to solve it.
On the solution, yeah.
Yeah, on the solution.
And all of those are 80s and 90s movies, you know? Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. that when... So those are the movies I grew up with, right? So to me, a mad scientist wasn't necessarily a bad thing, because I remember from those movies. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
It's interesting that the most popular mad scientist movies of this millennia have been kids movies. So like Despicable Me and Minions and Megamind and Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. that there's this.
That's such a good point. Yeah.
Yeah, I find that really, and even like in terms of cartoons, like Pinky and the Brain, Rick and Morty, which is kind of adult, but it's still an animated.
Yeah. And he's Rick and Morty, it's one of those things where you're like, no, but you know, he's lovable. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, do you have a favorite movie that had kind of this archetype of either the mad scientist or kind of that experimentation type of scenario or theme in it?
There are so many great ones. I think my my personal favorite is probably Cronenberg's take on The Fly, partly because
Not the original with the giant fly head?
Right. No, because of the degeneration. And he's aware of the degeneration at first, and then he accepts and he starts to think that he's becoming something more, something different. And it's that where he is truly the subject, because he is seeing it from, we're experiencing it from the subjective point of view. What is happening? As well as through the eyes of his love. I really love that and there's no simple way to extract. I mean, in that picture, the DNA is intimately fused, so that it appears early on there's not going to be a way to actually reverse it.
Right. Yeah. Kind of like the metamorphosis, right? Kind of thing. It's like, this is... Oh, that's a good one.
I have a really soft spot. This is, most people really hate this movie, but I love the 1996 version of Island of Dr. Moreau with
Hopkins, Anthony Hopkins.
No, the Godfather.
How can I forget?
Yes, I'm completely spacing on his name too. But I think it's just a really. Quirky, weird, and again, it's about this. There's these transformations going on, and that one is looking at it from a societal point of view, because this group of what used to be animals who are now becoming human, but they're creating their own society, so they're looking at it through this kind of societal lens, and it goes bonkers, that movie, but I really. And there's a great documentary about the making of that movie, which is also on Netflix right now. Where the original filmmaker was actually fired from it, and then snuck onto the set and was watching as it was kind of taken over. But you find out why that movie was so strange, because of all the things that kind of happened on the set.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I haven't seen that movie in so long. Wow.
But yourself, do you have a favorite mad scientist movie?
So I thought about it all week, okay? And I think I did mention, like, Truman Show, like, really affected me as a kid. But I think the one that kind of represents the craziness of the mad scientist thing the most, for me anyway, is Joss Whedon's Cabin in the Woods.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Of course.
Yeah. I was thinking about it. I was like, because that movie, once you realize what's happening... It's incredible, you know. There's a whole room full of people just
right
pushing buttons to see what happens, you know? Like, well, let's hit them with another thing and let's do this again. And it's again, it has all of that. It's a manipulated situation. It is, like they're selected for a particular reason. And mm-hmm. then they're just manipulated throughout the whole movie. And then it's a really fun movie because of all of the tools they have at their disposal, right? Which many of them are supernatural. And then when you get that peek into all of the other options that they had that they didn't even use, and you can imagine what they put other people through mm-hmm. is,
I wouldn't have thought of that as a mad scientist movie. One of the reasons I think that we have seen less mad scientist movies is there's a lot of mad spirituality or mad religion movies now. So like there's a lot of exorcisms and a lot of supernatural where some kind of evil entity is involved. And it's interesting because Cabin in the Woods is a ritual. I mean, the outside, it looks like it's a scientific experiment.
Yeah. Well, you go through stages as you're watching the movie.
Exactly. There's a ritual. It's a spiritual ritual that's going on. That's a really interesting choice because there is this kind of scientific element, even where they're making bets about, you know, which creature is going to be chosen.
Yeah. Oh, and they're monitoring. Everybody has lab uh-huh. coats on. Uh-huh. You know,
they're monitoring their vitals. They're even monitoring their vitals throughout the
Yep. And it's, you know, it takes the archetype and plays with it in such a fun way because it's what if you had a whole room full of mad scientists, you know? Mm-hmm. And it at the end you realize it's a ritual, but again, it's a fun ride, that movie.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I think the reason why a lot of these things are attractive, right, and even entertaining to an extent. Again, I'm not entertained by the idea of manipulating people, but I think that just the fact that there's enough, even the supernatural stuff, just the idea that somebody could be messing with you is that I think what goes to the core of the mad scientist, whether it's out of curiosity, whether it's out of them really wanting to save the world, you know, mm-hmm. and make mm-hmm. a difference. Like the fly is a perfect example, right? Like he's inventing a teleporter, right? He wants to transport people from one things and people from one place to another, and it goes wrong. And then Boys from Brazil is just like, let's make another Hitler. Mm-hmm. And the motivations for those things are obviously polar opposites, and there's the stuff in between where things happen by accident. Mm-hmm. What's one? I don't know, like the Manhattan Project, mm-hmm. that movie, right? Where they're trying to, I don't know, it was like radar or something, and then they accidentally create time travel. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. So things like that, right? I mean, regardless of what it is, I think there's this also this fear of like this carelessness that someone could have so much power and possibly affect the lives of other people in such a profound way, mm-hmm. usually negative, mm-hmm. right? I can't think of an example where it's like, oh, well, you know, that was fantastic because now, you know, you cured cancer by accident. Thanks. That never really happens. Again, except in the kids movies, right? Where something like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, right? Whereas mm-hmm. That one's, even though it's like a disaster with all this giant food, but it's in the end, it's kind of fun and you possibly solved the problem. Yeah, there's so much good stuff there. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on that we haven't kind of mentioned?
The emergence of the military-industrial complex and how that's kind of very often the secondary villain in movies now, like in the Alien movies, for example. I think one of the really good examples of that for me is The Blob in the 1950s. The Blob was just a meteorite that crashed on Earth. Again, spoilers. And this creature comes out of it. But then in the 1988 version, as the story progresses, we find that it was actually a military-industrial... it was based on this experiment by the military-industrial complex, like The Mist and Piranha, you know, and The Crazies. Yeah. a lot of these movies were... even though... like a lot of the zombie movies have the same kind of you know, that this was something that kind of got out into the wild, that was actually trying to perfect in a lab.
Oh, actually, again, I don't know if this is a stretch, but the original Alien was, you didn't know where it came from, what it was. It was just a thing. And then Prometheus, it kind of shows this example of this. It's not necessarily military industrial, but it is this whole race of people just kind of creating different races and species mm-hmm. in different places. And mm-hmm. like, you know, there's this suggestion that they created humans and they've created the alien, you know? That's a lot of explanation for something that, you know, 20, 30 years before didn't need all that explanation. But now there had to be this higher government order.
That's another really... I would not have thought of Prometheus as a mad scientist movie. But if you actually think of it at the beginning... where that they have to destroy entire ecosystems and planets in order to be able to propagate the kind of life that they're trying to propagate. Life forms. So again, there is this kind of mad science, you know, making in my image.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So these themes run deep in a lot of things. And I don't know. And I know that moving forward right now, what's popular is the idea of I think, you know, the Christmas episode of Black Mirror was perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, this idea, just different versions of how the next thing we're going to manipulate is AI and mm-hmm. how we're possibly going to. Again, just prod it and see what makes it tick and try to change it and see what happens. And you know, to many extents, like because we can't do that as much with people, you do that with simulations of people, mm-hmm. right? And as those simulations get more and more real, there's all new ethical questions that will be coming up. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't think we're going to get to, you know... AI becoming sentient or anything like that in my lifetime, probably. But I think we'll get to a point. I mean, we're already at that point where we see videos of people kicking a robot and we empathize for the robot, mm-hmm. you know? Uh-huh. So it's, you know, when is PETA going to have their robotics division, you know, trying to intervene on this type of thing? Because I think maybe this goes to the same feeling. Like, I don't want to see anybody be kicked around. I don't want to see anybody manipulated or in a situation that they don't want to be. And even though it's a robot created for the purpose of not falling over and being kicked, it still doesn't feel right. And we didn't even, you know, we haven't even talked about, like, what effect that has on the actual scientists or the experiments or the other people in the lab. You know, the person that's kicking that robot, how do they feel? If I feel bad looking at the video, how do they feel?
Right.
There's a lot there. And throughout history, many people have been in situations where they did do all sorts of experiments where people were affected. And one thing that I don't think that people talk about a lot is the fact that, you know, there are like clinical trials that happen all the time. And in a way, those are, you know, it's like gambling. They're like, well, we're going to try this out. And it doesn't work. You know, some people do. There are severe side effects, or if someone dies because they had a placebo, like what are the ethics there? You know, and that's kind of common knowledge. But it's not so far from these movies that we're talking about.
That's science. I mean, that's the scientific method. So, and people consent to that going in, knowing that they may be given the drug that doesn't work.
You know, true, consent is a big deal. Of course.
Black Mirror is an interesting one because it's like the mad science has been released into the world. And then you see it through the lens of criminal justice in one episode, through the lens of interpersonal relationships in one episode, like with the memory, recording of memories. You see it through the media in the one episode with the kind of... American Idol kind of like that's such a brilliant show.
In October we get 10 new episodes, 13 new episodes.
Yes.
All in one shot? I cannot wait. You know what PsychTech is going to be all about for the last couple weeks of the year. I think we dove deep into this topic, and I'm so glad that you brought it up. And I hope that if someone has seen Stranger Things and like me didn't think so much about Dr. Brenner because you were afraid of the monster, you know, kind of how he really was this distraction. There was this thing going on, and how refreshing it was to see that pop up again, you know, that mad scientist. This was a very, very fun discussion.
Yes, I enjoyed it very much.
Thanks, Doug.
Thank you.